morning. We are chilling with our VC, and I say chilling loosely. he's actually having some tea. He's a tea drinker.
Yeah.
And before you came in the studio, Prof, we were actually speaking about this, saying it's so confusing that when you go out to these conferences or these events, you see people putting in the water first.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the tea bag first.
Yeah.
And then you question yourself, what's how? So I've been doing it wrong my whole life.
Yeah.
Like, whenever you have the opportunity to make your own tea, what goes in first?
Look, normally, I'm not saying it's the right way to do, but let me start by greeting you. So good to be back, you know, UJFM, you know, it's my home, you know, 95.4. Thank you for the invitation. What I normally do, look, my tea is terrible when I make it, you know, at home. I put sugar first sometimes, brown sugar, 1 teaspoon, and then I put the tea bag and milk, and then, you know, and then water. But my wife always says, my tea looks like, you know, water from after washing dishes.
Wow.
It looks terrible. So because I'm impatient, you know, sometimes I take it out quickly, the tea bag quickly.
Yes.
So when she makes me tea, she has the most wonderful tea one can ever have. She uses a microwave and then she warms up the milk and so on.
Yes.
Oh, it's very delicious. But, you know, tea is tea, I guess.
Well, now we have it. Whichever way you're doing it, I guess is correct.
I guess. I mean, but okay, so Prof, no, don't you get confused, Jorge. For example, you take the tea bag and then you have the sugar. Aren't you scared where the flavors are going to clash?
No, nothing will clash. I say tea is tea, you know.
Mm.
I mean, whatever works for you, you know.
Mm.
For me, it's important that at least it's hot.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of sugar. You know, soon I'll be 50. And I said, when I turn 50, I'm not taking sugar anymore. So for now, you know, when I put that 1 teaspoon of brown sugar, it's like a ceremony.
Health is wealth. Yep, most
true.
So yes, that is our VC here in studio. Prof, I think the last time we had a conversation with you, it was shortly after the inauguration.
Yeah.
So I'd say about 3 months now. Firstly, we'd like to know, how is it going in the new position? Well, no longer that new. And what are some of the challenges that you've had to face?
You know, so far so good. I mean, look, when new leaders come into their positions, especially if they come from other organizations, you know, they're external people, they try hard to understand the new environment. But for me, I was fortunate because I'm a UG guy, as you know, through and through. So for me, you know, this saying that one hits the ground running, you know, really, I think applies to me. It didn't feel like, you know, we had a break, you know, and a change, you know, and so on. So, yeah, you know, the people know me, I know the people, and we just kept on going. You know, you can see with the rankings and many things that we're doing, UJ's on the rise.
It
is. So yeah, that is it's really a blessing of some sort, you know, and I'm grateful for that. And the support I've received from students, staff, you know, and all the UJ stakeholders.
Mm.
In terms of challenges, obviously there are things that are close to my heart. You know, this thing of student finance really worries me, you know. Obviously, there's so much that one can do, and we're doing our utmost best to make sure that our students don't only get access to good education, but, you know, they get access for success, that they complete their studies successfully. So that is one of the big things that really keeps me awake at night. Yeah. But we're working on these challenges, and together we'll take this wonderful university forward.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned rankings, and I know that recently UJ ranked number one with the DHET accredited research outputs.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if I may add, we don't have a medical school yet.
Yeah.
We could really take this to the top.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. So were we expecting this? And I mean, how did you feel just 3 months in?
Yeah. Look, it felt good. People would tell me that, you know, you're taking credit for the work done by your predecessor. And I'm like, no, I'm not taking credit No, because I was part of this. You know, I'm a strong researcher. I've been contributing last year. You know, I wrote a book together with my postdoc that brings 10 units and so on. But it's not about who did what, you know. It's about us as a collective seeing our hard work, you know, paying off nicely. So really, it feels good, you know, and we're going to work hard to maintain that and continue to grow, challenge ourselves and be the best that we can be. Remember, in the process, this means, you know, more research is generated, staff, you know, young guys that are coming in get an opportunity to publish and so on. It makes them promotable and all that, and we contribute to the generation of new knowledge, you know, to South Africa, to the continent and the world. So that is marvelous.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Now, you also mentioned a medical school.
Yeah.
I know that we touched on this the last time we were here, but in that time, we've been to DFC and we've been to Campus Square and we've seen these buildings being erected.
Yeah.
So now the question is, are any of these the long awaited medical school?
Well, you know, we're working on it. You know, I'll tell you, if we get the green light, you know, this country, the continent, the world will see a medical school like no other. But certainly you have to go through these motions, these processes. Mm. And we hope, you know, in the end, you know, we'll get that opportunity to host and run, you know, a medical school that would combine medicine, technology, you name it.
Yes.
So we're still working on it. You know, we're waiting for feedback from the relevant committees and so on. But
bureaucracy.
Know, all good things, you know, worth having, you know, I guess they worth the wait, I guess. Yeah.
True.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Well, if you're listening and you're in that committee, we need this medical school, okay? Please.
<Like that.
laughs> So, Prof, now moving on to funding.
Yes.
I know that funding is a huge part to running a university. We've recently had new research chairs. It was the green hydrogen economy and the blockchain. What does this mean for UJ, not just for the lecturers, but for students who are coming in?
Yeah, this is amazing because, I mean, it's new areas, not necessarily new, but with this chairs, this provides an opportunity for our students, you know, to learn more about this, do research with our professors in this space, and make a contribution. I mean, blockchain is really big. Green hydrogen, you know, we are talking about green energy. We're talking about, you know, sustainability. So this is just amazing. And this ties in nicely with the university that we are, you know, 4IR, you know, blockchain is big. And then green hydrogen, we talk about sustainability. As you know, we are ranked as number one on the African continent in terms of our contribution to sustainable development goals.
Indeed,
so this is at the right home, you know, right place, you know, right time.
That is correct. Yeah. And I agree with you 100%, Prof. Yeah. It's 27 minutes after 8 a.m. We are going to catch a quick break. But when we come back, we are continuing our conversation. Now, Prof is a father. And as UJ students, from time to time, he will host these forums and conferences where he speaks to us. Do stick around to find out all about that. Here's DJ Zintle and Muzzle. Ngisima Mise.
The Breakfast Team, keeping you entertained from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.
This is the UJ FM Breakfast Show. And we are chilling with our VC, okay? So, Prof, before the break, we were actually speaking about some of the forums that you host, where you lead. I know that one of them was the men's forum, and this was on fatherlessness. And one of the things that you touched on or that you said, I'm just going to paraphrase here, but to talk about fatherlessness, let's talk about what they see and what they do. So this is suggesting a lack of guidance or direction of sorts. So from this, what would you, how would you say fatherlessness impacts our students here at the university?
Yeah, look, this is a sensitive, you know, subject. You know, we should start by unpacking the concept of fatherlessness. Because often people link it to being connected with somebody biologically. But, you know, a father could be an uncle, could be any male figure, role model that can guide, you know, and help shape, especially our young boys, into the fathers we want to see in our society. So that is one of the takeaways, you know, from this forum. And it really it encouraged me to even write an opinion piece about us, you know, you know, you know, this opinion piece was about us relooking the concept, you know, of fatherlessness in terms of what it means
in society.
You know, yeah, in society. I talked about my case because, as you know, I lost my dad at the age of six. You know, and I said, yes, I miss him. You know, and there are times when I wish he was there. When I graduated with my PhD, when I got married, when I was installed as a vice chancellor. But you know, it is what it is. But at the same time, I celebrate all the men that played the father figure role in my life, my uncle and so on. And one colleague in the crowd stood up and said he lost his dad 3 years ago, but all these years he was missing in action. So this thing doesn't, you know, I thought I lost something because I lost mine at six, but he lost his 3 years ago, but he didn't play any meaningful role. But all in all, it was a success, and we're going to have more of this so that, you know, we can have this difficult conversations. Hopefully we can contribute in our small ways to you know, ensuring that we have fathers we need in this society.
I really liked this forum, Prof, especially because we all know that GBV is a real problem, a serious problem in our country.
Yeah.
So I do believe that one of the best ways to tackle it is to actually try to mold our young boys into society. So moving on from that, you also took part in the International Association University Presidents that happened in Cairo.
Yeah.
So I'm not too sure what the event was centered on.
Yeah.
But what I do want to know is what was your takeaway from that?
Yeah. Yes, we let me start by pointing out that I'm a member of the International Association of University Presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also the vice president for Africa. And the theme was about, you know, how we take universities forward, you know, after the pandemic. And yeah, it was really an amazing event, you know, because you learn from fellow vice chancellors, presidents of university from all over the world.
Mm.
And it's also an opportunity to network, you know, with colleagues and discuss, you know, common challenges and build from there. Another thing that I took that I think as a country we can learn from how these colleagues organize this event is that they combined the formal, you know, formal discussions and engagements with cultural, you know, activities, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, one morning before we started with the formal discussions, we went to the pyramids, you know, of Giza,
yes,
which was amazing, you know, in terms of how clean the place is, how well looked after the place is. And I thought about us here in Johannesburg. We've got the Cradle of Mankind, you know, is a place that we can add, you know, to our programs when we host people so they can enjoy this cultural side, you know. Other than that, you know, it was a good networking opportunity. Soon we'll be signing MOUs with several universities, amazing universities, where, you know, we discuss some of the issues there. The agreements are now being looked at by our various legal officers. So yeah, all in all, it was a success.
That does sound interesting, Prof. And quite interestingly, just the other day we were speaking about these heritage sites not being kept after, and this nearest one, Constitution Hill, it is not, it's deteriorating.
It's
honestly
unacceptable.
It is
unacceptable.
So Prof, another trip that you recently took was to Ghana. I did see that on social media, and it looked like so much fun.
Yeah.
What was happening there?
Yeah, we have a partnership with the University of Professional Studies in Accra, Ghana, and we also have a relationship with several Ghanaian universities, including the University of Cape Coast. By the way, I'm a visiting professor at the Faculty of Law of the University of Cape Coast. But for this specific visit, you know, we spent a lot of time with our colleagues at the University of Professional Studies in Accra, where we also launched our book, Labor Law in Ghana, a book that I did with my postdoctoral research fellow. And I also gave a public lecture, which is available on YouTube, on artificial reproductive technology, legal and ethical challenges through an African prism, where we highlighted some of these things, you know, because Africa is often left behind, you know, you know, medical, you know, technology advances, and I highlighted some of the challenges that we are facing there that we need to deal with. And before I came up with this topic, you know, I wrote a lot about this in South Africa. I didn't want to come across as insensitive in Ghana, but when I was told that there are many of these fertility clinics, and I was shocked to hear that many students, I'm not saying it should happen here in South Africa, many young students, you know, in Ghana would donate their semen for a fee, of course. People are being paid to do this.
Even in America.
It's big.
And young ladies donate their eggs, you know.
Yes.
And this is dangerous, in my opinion.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Mm.
Without proper regulatory frameworks, I mean, you could end up marrying your younger brother or, you know, your older sister or younger, you know, without knowing.
You know?
So given the you know, publicity that, you know, came from this, there were lots of articles in the media about this, television and radio interviews. I think mission accomplished, so that people can start talking about this thing and hopefully come up with the right regulatory frameworks. Yeah.
It has the attention it needs.
Yeah.
So, Prof, we've got a couple of questions here from our students.
Mm-hmm.
I will just play a couple of those voice notes for you and then maybe get a couple of responses before we let you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's our first one. I believe that this one is coming through from Joy.
I have a question about the unisex bathrooms. Having used them only twice before, I've had very uncomfortable experiences both times. What policies or any arrangements that can be made to ensure safety for both males and females using unisex bathrooms?
That's a fair question.
Yes, you know, that is a good question. Interesting enough, another colleague spoke to me, you know, offline about this and the concern that you are raising, and it's something that is being looked at, you know, as we roll. As we roll out these unisex bathrooms, I mean, this is a real risk, you know. You'll never know, who's there for right reasons and wrong reasons, and we have to really come up with ways and means to make sure that this is balanced. I mean, one way is to not convert all of these bathrooms into unisex bathrooms, but if that is the way, you know, we need to have a clear, you know, understanding in terms of the risks that we face. So this is something that is being looked at, and proper communications, you know, will be provided, you know, and we'll take those into account.
Okay, of course we'll also keep you updated when that happens and once we know more on that issue. Here's another question for you, Prof. Let me just play that.
When you were in uni, UJ was called Rao. So how different is it from back then to how it is now? And what past experiences from when you were in university would you like to implement into the current experience for UJ learners right now?
Okay, so this one just looking at your experences.
Look, I mean, when I was a student and a member of staff of the then Rand Afrikaanse Universiteit. Obviously Africans were the minority, and Africans in a broad sense, you know, including colored Indians, of course, and black, black like me. And we can see the transformation in terms of where we're coming from. Really, we come a long way, and this is a good thing. Obviously, this now poses another responsibility on us to ensure that our student profile, you know, is representative of the demographics of the country. This is something that I'm discussing with my team to say, look, the number of students from other groups that are not represented should correlate with the national demographics, something that we are working on. In terms of what I'm taking from my time during the RAU days is that I benefited a lot from mentoring, you know, and the opportunities that colleagues provided. And this is something that I'm trying to do almost on a daily basis. When I travel, I engage with international partners to create opportunities for our students and staff. And that is the way to go. It's just one way in which, you know, I would say what helped me during the RAU days, you know, something that can benefit a lot of people. There was strong mentorship that I got. To give an example, you know, during those days, I went overseas twice, you know, to do research for my LLM master's minor dissertation. And I spent 4 months in Germany doing research for my PhD. We are also a visiting academic. So those type of opportunities are extremely important.
They are. Indeed. Speaking of opportunities, we've got Africa by Bus, which is a flagship, something we do annually. Now, I've been there. It's amazing.
Have you?
And yes, I was.
Where did you go?
We went to Botswana. It was beautiful. It was. So I'm ambitious, I know. Maybe Europe by plane?
Look, that would defeat the purpose. But as part of our student exchanges, of course, there are students that go, but in small numbers in different programs, and we want to increase that. Erasmus Plus is also an opportunity where we have exchange students to go and have international experiences. So it's not a far-fetched idea, but a whole plane load of UJ students, it will break the bank. But we'll create more opportunities. Remember, you don't have to take all at once. You know, 4 year, 3 year, 2 there. This is how we grew. This is how we grow.
Now, Mandela Day is coming up, Prof. Before we let you go, what is UJ doing or what are you doing? Let me not say UJ, because we as UJFM probably have something of our own. What are you doing?
We're doing a lot. Let me start with UJ because I'm the head of UJ. You know, people celebrate Mandela Day on the 18th of July. We celebrate the day, but we also celebrate Mandela Month. You know, we want to give, you know, the lots of things that are lined up, programs that are lined up by our committee engagement. government office, and this will include, you know, cleaning up, supporting, helping, you know, our sick at hospitals.
Helen Joseph,
and so on. It will also include, you know, cleaning up, you know, our campuses and so on. I have a hectic diary, but I'm going to set time aside, you know, to be part of a cleaning campaign. You know, this saying that cleanliness is next to godliness, you know, it's extremely important. So I will be part of the team that will be, you know, picking up trash. And I do this because growing up at my village, if they wanted to say somebody's mentally disturbed, they will say he or she is picking papers. Maybe that's why people are throwing trash that's and they don't want to pick it. So I want to pick trash and I'm not mentally disturbed.
That's inspiring. And I know last year we were at Helen Joseph, so I'm not sure if that's what we'll be doing again this year. But before you go, Prof, we've got a little something from us here at UJ and UJ FM. This is from Utemave. I hope you enjoy.
You have merited a goal and ambition, a sacred promise to uplift you until it reaches supremacy. So far led by example, you have greatness, excellency, power, leadership, and eminence you have shown.
That's so beautiful.
That, you know, people wait for somebody to die before they give them their flowers.
And
I accept those flowers. Thank you so much. You know, we'll continue to work hard as a team and elevate our people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Prof. And Demave for those beautiful, beautiful words. Now, Prof requested a song. I do hope I got it right, because if I didn't, I might lose my job.
Yeah.
But
I'm kidding. We learn from our mistakes.
Here's the DJ Jazzy D with Lady Soul on UJ FM. Thank you so much, Prof, for doing this with us. And hopefully we will be seeing you again in the next few months.
Of course.
And that's how we wrap it up. Thank you so much for sending through those questions. And let's enjoy some DJ Jazzy D.